Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Legislative Oversight Agency for Ohio State Prison System is on life support. Last summer, Republican leadership in the Ohio General Assembly threatened to dissolve the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee unless its director stepped down, which she did, and then the agency went largely silent. Now, former Senate President Keith Faber of Salina, is now a member of the House, and he's recommended the oversight be shifted to the Inspector General's office. Columbus Dispatch reporter Alan Johnson has been covering the issue. He joins us now. Welcome back, Alan.
Thank you very much, Ann.
And to our listeners, this is just a note. We reached out to Representative Keith Faber and Senator Cliff Height, who is chair of the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee. They did not respond to our request to join the show. We also requested interviews with the Ohio Inspector General's office and the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, both declined to participate. So, Alan, it's just you and me.
All right. Okay. We can do it.
What was the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee mission when it was first created in 1977?
Okay. Well, let me give you an admission first, and you'll rarely hear this from me. I'm very biased about this subject, and I'll tell you why I'm biased. Not because of politics, but because this was a very, very important agency to me as a reporter and by comparison to the public because they did such good work. Anyway, I just want you to know.
I'll say that when I covered state government as a reporter, it was a bona fide kind of institution,
an
institution on at the State House, and people – refer to it. We listen. Yeah.
Well, anyway, the history of it.
So it's surprising. All of this is surprising to people who followed it.
The history of it, and it even precedes you and I at the State House, which means, as you say, it goes back to 77. It was created by the Democrats when the Republicans, as they are now, were in control of the administration. That would have been Rhodes, I believe. And the Democrats wanted an oversight agency over prisons. At that time, just adult prisons. Juveniles have since been added to its job. But to say, you know, there are problems. We don't necessarily trust the administration to resolve it. If they're inmate complaints, if they're family complaints, if they're issues, we would like a legislative watchdog. They didn't use the word, but that's what it was.
So the Ohio General Assembly was controlled by Democrats at the time, I take it.
Yes, Vernreif and company.
Right. And then the governor's office, of course, was controlled by Republicans.
Okay. So it was like we have a big prison system. We have a lot of people. And the father of this was the late C.J. McClellan, who people may not know because he's been gone a while, but his daughter, Ryan McClellan, was a legislator and was mayor of the city of Dayton. And he's a black man, and there's a lot of black folks in prison, and he wanted to make sure that everybody got an even hand, but especially those people who had complaints. You know, my son's being mistreated, my husband, whatever. And so it was like that was its function for many years. It was basically a complaint-taking agency. And then mostly under Joanna Saul, but even before that, it started expanding its role a little bit. And this is where our plot thickens a little bit because they started doing more reporting. They started looking at substantive issues, and it eventually rubbed the Republicans wrong.
Why?
You know, excuse me, Ann. I'm not really sure why, because these are Republican legislators, and it's the Republican governor that I would think would have been irritated by it if they were criticizing the administration and the prisons. But for whatever reason, I'm not really sure, although I do know that Senator, now Representative Faber, had some conflicts with Joanna Saul, the director who, as
just
you mentioned,
like personality conflicts?
Personality conflicts. They thought she was exceeding her authority. They thought she was doing too much, that this was supposed to be an oversight agency, not a watchdog agency.
What's the difference?
Well, in their legislative view, this is a legislative agency. They are beholden to us, the legislature. They, you know, do what we want them to do, and they're not supposed to be out barking and snarling and watchdogging on things like food, prison food, maggots in prison food, gangs in prison, guard versus inmate levels, violence, all of the things that happen in prison. And Joanna, to her credit, and this is where my bias comes in, she did a great job with that. She provided reports that I wrote many, many, many stories about all of those subjects and more. And it was incredibly valuable. And each time she would do it, I would check with the administration, Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, with whom I've had a very great longstanding relationship. And I would say, I got these numbers from the CIIC. Are they right? Invariably, they were right. It was never a mistake. Now, you might not like the result of the report. You might not like the direction it took. You might not like its conclusion. But the numbers are right. And that's why it was so important.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about oversight of Ohio's state prison system. It looks like the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee, which was formed back in, 30 years ago now, is on its last legs. My guest right now is Alan Johnson of the Columbus Dispatch. He's been covering prison system in Ohio for many years. If you have a question or comment about this issue, Correctional Institution Inspection Committee, which is probably going to be eliminated with some of its responsibilities shifted over to the Inspector General's office, which is under the governor now, so that would no longer be a legislative committee. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, you said that invariably what they reported, what the inspection committee, CIIC, reported was invariably right. A lot of that had to do with the fact that back in the day, and up until relatively recently, the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections complied with records requests. Mm-hmm. That stopped. Was it sometime last fall or last year?
It hasn't stopped entirely, but okay. If you imagine the faucet full speed, it's down to a trickle.
Okay.
Excuse me. And I don't really know why. You may see a story in the Dispatch someday in the future about why, because I don't really know exactly why. I think there are attorneys involved, God bless them, but who think that there should be not so much information out there about specifics regarding prisons, and I don't know exactly why. There is more sensitivity to victims and what information goes out there. For example, if you've been raped, they may not want us to interview a person who committed the rape, even if we have a legitimate reason as a news organization to do it. But that being said, I'm really not sure why. But you're right. The rehabilitation and correction, the spigot has turned down to a trickle of information, which made CIIC even more valuable. We would probably have not written about with much specificity the problem we had with foods in the prison, which was by a private company.
Right.
We wouldn't have had so much detail about violence, inmate on inmate and inmate on guards, as we have.
Another issue is private prisons in general. Mm-hmm. The CIIC did a big report on one of the private prisons in Ohio. It changed its ways after that report came out.
They did. And in fact, I think you could argue that, in not only with the private prisons, but the public prisons as too, the state prisons, corrected things and changed course after these reports. Because if you have a thing about, let's say, contraband in prison, which would be drugs, tobacco, knives, cell phones, there's a lot of cell phones in prison, then if you have different procedures for it and there's less contraband coming in, then that's a positive step. And that's why what newspapers do, what radio does, what TV reporters do, shine some light on things. And then some action can be taken to correct it. And my fear is that light is not shining so much. And really, really, I feel a loss of it as a reporter.
I always felt like one of the outstanding qualities of the CIIC was that it was bipartisan, mm-hmm. equal.
Right.
Didn't matter who was in control. And now explain to me it's not equal anymore. They changed the makeup of the committee, or it's going to be changed, or what's going on with
that? Well, currently, again, keep in mind, as you said earlier, that it may just be completely scuttled more
right.
or less and moved over to the Inspector General.
And by the way, it's really not doing anything anyways.
No,
right now.
To my knowledge, and I admittedly haven't checked for a few weeks, but I don't even know that they've had a meeting. I don't know that they have a director on board. If they did, it's an acting director. But they changed the makeup of it so it would be that there would be more of the party and leadership controlling it. So you would have, instead of having an equal opportunity nonpartisan, you would have the party in charge, which is the Republicans, would be able to call the shots and say, well, we really don't want an investigation on that. Well, political power.
But did they say why?
No.
They just did it.
No. No, there wasn't an official explanation, as there are often for partisan moves in the legislature, unfortunately.
And of course, once again, we did reach out to former Senate President Keith Faber, who's now a member of the Ohio House. and also Senator Cliff Hite, who is chair of the CIIC. What did Democrats say about this, since obviously they were the losers in all of this?
Yeah, well, they were very unhappy about it. But as you know, the Democrats in the legislature are a minority and a very small minority, especially in the Senate. So they said it was unfair, that we were losing, the public was losing a lot, that the prison system was losing a lot. And I was just thinking, I want to throw in there, why is this important? Because I found, as you said, I've been covering prisons a long time, more than 25 years now. And I found, as a rule, the public doesn't much care about prisons unless they have a loved one who's been in or is going in or they've been a victim of a crime.
But it is a pocketbook issue for
all
of us.
Absolutely. It's a pocketbook issue for all of us because the prison system employs more people than any other agency in state government. Plus, in my opinion, even more importantly, these folks, 9 out of 10, are coming back. So if they commit a crime, they're going to be back next door to you. They're going to be back at the grocery store. They're going to be back in the restaurant. They're going to be back in the community. And you should care. As the public, I'm saying you should care, because how they're treated in prison and what rehabilitation and drug treatment they get matters when they get out in the community. So I'm always disappointed, frankly, in the public that they don't care more, because it's a really important issue.
You reported that the agency's biennial report was not posted in January as required by Ohio law. Is there an explanation for that?
No, it just hasn't been. I haven't checked for a couple of weeks since I wrote the last story, but I think they're just treading water.
How big is the CIIC?
It's relatively small. Their budget is probably about $400,000, which is a lot of money, don't get me wrong, but compared to multi-millions of dollars of agencies. And I think they have 5 or 6 people, staff.
And without a director, and as far as we know, there is no director, which has been the case since last summer. They're just not doing anything, but we just don't know.
Well, again, I don't know exactly what they're doing. I'm sure they're doing some of their duties, which they do inspections. That was the correctional institution inspection. They actually went out. I do not know if they've actually gone to a prison and inspected, but typically legislators were going out with staff and going to prisons and checking them out and saying, how are the inmates doing? How's the food service?
And they could be unannounced as well. That was a key part of that.
And I think they may have done a few of those, but again, I'm not certain. But they're treading water. That's it. They're treading water.
Joanna Saul didn't just have run-ins with Republicans. She also had a run-in with a Democrat who has since been left the legislature and been assigned or been appointed to the Ohio Parole Board, which is a big deal. Tell us about what the conflict was there.
Well, the conflict there was basically about the private prison, or not the private prison food contract, not the private
prison. With Aramark.
Prison. Aramark, the national company that does. And how that – Aramark had a lot of problems. Admittedly, they have corrected them. And again, I would say part of it is due to this reporting from CIIC. But they had food shortages. They had employees who were fired. They had people who were stealing. They had people who were bringing in drugs. They had maggots in the food. And Joanna, in my opinion, correctly for the public interest, said this should be done. We should write about this. And Shirley Smith, for whatever reason,
a Democrat
who was in the legislature at the time, did not think that that should be happening. I don't know if she got pressure from the administration, if she was doing it on her own. I talked to her and I never really got a good answer. But they clashed. I mean, Shirley Smith said, I am the director or the chairman of this committee, chairwoman, and I tell you what to do. You don't tell me what you're going to do.
So Shirley Smith wasn't curious about the things that the CIIC was reporting?
Apparently not. Or either that, or she didn't want them to be reporting what they were reporting. So Shirley tried to fire Joanna.
Right.
I wrote that she was trying to fire her, and it bought her, I don't know, a few months or whatever of time, and she was reinstated or never actually fired. So that went on. But then eventually we came to the point that we've been discussing, where it was loggerheads in the General Assembly, and it was done in the dark of night, literally in the dark of night, like 10 o'clock at night on as they were in the budget phase last year.
Which is always a fun phase anyways.
Really,
and they actually went to Joanna Saul and talked with her for several minutes. Everything came to a standstill.
Right.
And at the end of it, she had resigned.
She had resigned. Now, the Republicans are now saying, well, that was the Democrats who made that deal. And technically it was, because the Democrats, she was she was just going to be gone. The agency was going to be gone. The Democrats intervened. You ask what they were doing. Uh-huh. They intervened and they said, will you resign if we keep the agency intact? And Joanna, to her credit, said, yes, I value the agency more than I value my job, which I think is noble. And she said, I'll give it up. Now the Republicans say, well, we didn't make that deal. So,
right. But by the way, the legislator who opposed her reporting on Aramark, as I mentioned earlier, she didn't run for reelection.
Right.
And in the meantime, since has been appointed to the Ohio Parole Board, which is a very plum job.
Very good job.
Very good job.
And one could argue, cynically, you could argue that maybe she did the bidding of the administration and was rewarded for it with a plum appointment. I wouldn't say that, but maybe.
We'll never know because we've invited everybody to be on the show and they've declined. Now, we have some people who analyze prison corrections and the value of the prison corrections oversight committees like this around the country. We're going to talk with Mike Brickner of the ACLU Ohio and also a prison oversight expert. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about prison oversight this hour. Ohio's 30-year prison oversight agency, the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee, may be on its way out under pressure from state lawmakers. The director of the agency was forced to resign last year, and now lawmakers may eliminate it altogether and shift the duties to the inspector general under the governor's purview. Still with us is Columbus Dispatch reporter Alan Johnson, who's been covering
still with us
for the moment, who's been covering it for 25 years. Joining us by phone now is senior lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin and prison oversight expert Michelle Deitch. She is also the co-chair of the American Bar Association's Subcommittee on Correctional Oversight. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Also with us by phone is the Senior Policy Director for ACLU Ohio, Mike Brickner. Welcome back, Mike.
Thanks for having me on.
Just to remind folks, we did reach out to lawmakers who are behind the change of nature in the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee. They did not respond to our request to the show to join the show. And we also requested interviews with the Ohio Inspector General's Office and the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. Both declined to participate. Mike Brickner, what's your reaction to what's been going on at the Correctional Institution Inspection Committee?
Well, it's extremely disappointing what's happened at CIIC. I think it's important for all of the listeners to know that, you know, for the last 30 years, we have really been able to hold up CIIC as a national model of oversight for our state prisons, that having an independent body that is able to go in, do announced and unannounced inspections is something that has provided a real value to taxpayers, to the legislature, and to the Department of Corrections. And, you know, the incidents of the last few years where it seems that the past director has been punished for speaking out on issues, that now we have the CIIC that has effectively not been producing much work or many public reports, and we're not sure if they're doing inspections as of right now, that has been a real loss for us as the public and as taxpayers. And, you know, as we're looking at the current state of our prison system, where we are, you know, once again approaching record numbers of prisoners, it's even more disconcerting because when we have overpopulated prisons, the likelihood of bad conditions, a rise in violence, lack of medical care, all of those things are more and more likely to happen. And now we have lost one of the most important independent watchdogs looking at that situation.
Michelle Deitch, do you agree that it's been a model, the Ohio Correctional Institution Inspection Committee?
Yes, I absolutely agree with what Mike is saying. I have spent the last 10 years investigating models of independent correctional oversight all over the country, and I have held up the CIIC as a national model. It is oversight of this type is very, very rare in the United States. It's absolutely the norm around the world, but in the United States, it's very rare. And Ohio was one of those places that was doing it right. And so this is a very disconcerting development.
It seems like there have been a couple issues. One of the big changes over the past 30 years, at least in Ohio, and of course we know around the country as well, particularly in the South, is the increase in private prison operations. Does that play much of a role in oversight for these kinds of organizations?
Well, private prisons tend to have even less transparency and accountability for conditions inside than public prisons. And, you know, depending on how an oversight body is structured, they should be able to go into private facilities as well. Private prisons are known to have a long history of having a lot of problems in their operations, whether it's staffing issues and high turnover rates or operational problems such as abuse situations, escapes, medical neglect, et cetera. So we certainly want to make sure that there is that kind of transparency. And without a kind of monitoring body like the CIIC, then the only kind of oversight that these private prisons get is through the contract monitoring process by the agency that contracts with them. But that does nothing to increase public transparency.
Mike Brickner said a little bit ago that this is of value to taxpayers. You know, we've been talking about earlier in the program that, you know, people really don't care what goes on in prisons because, you know, it's not their problem. And these people are criminals that live there and so forth. What is the value to taxpayers, Michelle Deitch?
Sure. Well, first of all, they ought to care what goes on in prisons because these are people who are going to be getting out again, and they are going to be our neighbors and our colleagues, and they may be our children or our neighbors' children. And so we ought to care what goes on there. But when people get out, they bring with them the experiences that they have had there. If they've been abused or beaten or experienced issues that have been very concerning, they're going to bring that anger or the fear with them. It's going to be much harder for them to be productive citizens if they haven't been given the programming that they need there. Recidivism rates can be quite high. So when you've got an independent oversight body, it can make sure that inmates are not being abused, that they're getting medical care so that their medical conditions are not getting worse, which is going to be a burden on the taxpayers, and that it can make sure that the inmates are engaged in some kind of productive work or programming so that they'll be effectively rehabilitated and be able to reintegrate into the community. Also, in terms of if the public is interested primarily in cost savings, they should be aware that poor conditions lead to lawsuits, and lawsuits are very expensive for the taxpayers. So if you can have an oversight body that is preventing these problems from escalating and can stave off those lawsuits, there's going to be tremendous cost savings as well.
Ellen Johnson, what's the process by which they're going to eliminate the CIIC and shift its responsibilities to the Inspector General's office? Is that a line in the pending state budget?
Yes, it's part of built into the budget proposal. And I think the cost shift would be about $400,000. And the only reason we know about this is it came up during a budget hearing at which the Inspector General, Randy Meyer, was asked, do you think this is a good idea? And he essentially welcomed it. It isn't a done deal, but it seemed to me that the skids were greased, so to speak. And all due respect to the Inspector General, when they do an investigation, it takes a couple years. Some of these things can't wait a couple years. I mean, when we have conditions in prison with gangs, and we have overcrowding, and we have all of these issues, contraband. They're issues of today, not 2 years from now.
And he said he welcomed the additional duties along with the additional funding, but the additional funding would pay for the additional duties. It's
correct.
Not like he would have extra money.
Oh, absolutely. It would. I mean, again, it's ballpark $400,000, but they would add $400,000 to his budget to accommodate hiring some new folks to
would
do it.
Would there be a legislative component at all?
I am not aware that there would be.
Okay.
I mean, as you mentioned earlier, the Inspector General is a branch of the administration, so
right.
It would be under this governor or whatever future governors there would be. I don't know if it would be crafted so that there would be a committee or something that might have input, but it essentially would become an administrative function, which goes exactly against the 30 years ago reason it was created.
Yeah, Mike Brickner, if the agency is eliminated and its responsibility shifted to the Inspector General's office, it would be under the governor's purview. Is that a distinction that's of note?
I think it's absolutely important that, you know, the governor also appoints people for the Department of Corrections, and so, you know, people that he has appointed then will also be inspecting other departments that he is in charge of. And I think just the way that we know that politics oftentimes works is that having that extra layer of independence is really important. You know, I think that we saw that even with where the problems with CIIC sort of first originated. You know, Alan talked about the food privatization issue, but even predating that, CIIC had done a pretty rough but honest inspection of the Lake Erie Correctional Institution back in 2011-2012 when it was first sold to Corrections Corporation of America. And you know, there was quite a bit of blowback from that report in Columbus and with people within the administration. And so, you know, it's important to have that independent body to be able to speak out on those issues because if it's connected with, you know, other departments, I think that it becomes more difficult for them to really maintain that independent, unbiased voice.
Michelle Deitch, how do other states do this? Ohio is a model, but there must be oversight in some other states, right?
There's a handful of states that have some structure for providing oversight, but it's rare. It's very, very rare. California, for example, has a body. It's called the Department of the or it's called the California Inspector General, but it doesn't function the way an Inspector General's office functions. It's much more of a preventive monitoring body that routinely inspects the facilities and writes reports about them. It's important not to get hung up on what these organizations are called because the name doesn't mean the same thing in different
right.
places. In Texas, on the juvenile side, we have a body called the Office of the Independent Ombudsman, which again is a monitoring body that goes into every juvenile correctional facility and make sure that the rights of the youth are being protected. And the ombudsman can not only deal with those complaints, but also issue reports about problems that she's finding in the facilities. And those reports get issued to the legislature and to the governor. It's so important to make sure that the legislature is kept informed about the findings in these facilities, because they're the ones that ultimately have to fund the facilities, fix the problems. They're passing laws that need to be based on information that's accurate.
Stephen in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Go
ahead.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Sure.
Hello to Mike, my friend at ACLU. I'm from the Ohio Justice and Policy Center down here in Cincinnati. Just want to really thank you for this conversation today. And what I wanted to just reinforce was what Professor Deitch said about the expenses piling up. Our office, the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, is probably the leading litigator in the state when it comes to prisoner rights cases. We have about 30 active cases right now. We have a constant flow of cases. We get about 70 letters a day from inmates complaining of all kinds of just denials of basic medical care. And we can't take all those cases, of course. We only take the most severe. And we're talking about we represent clients that have lost limbs, clients that have died, clients that are have lost internal organs simply because of a denial of basic, easily preventable, easily treated medical issues. And it's all due to this overcrowding. And the need for this correctional institution inspection committee cannot be understated. The inhumanity of what happens in overcrowded conditions is astonishing. And unless we shine a light on that, we, the citizens and taxpayers, don't realize the inhumanity of that and the expense.
Yeah, what is the expense? I mean, how much does the state have wrapped up in lawsuit?
So that's a great question. Of course, most of our cases have to often end in confidential settlements. But
right.
I can tell you the Attorney General is eager to litigate these to the nth degree and motion practices and appeals up and down on even the tiniest things. And so there's not only the settlements that we get and damages for our clients who, again, we're talking about the only cases we take are the ones with the most severe. So tens of thousands of dollars on the damages side and then tens of thousands of dollars on the legal expense side for attorneys for the state that litigate these things so aggressively.
You know, it's important to remember that it's not just cases that seek damages. There are also many, many cases around the country that have resulted in long-term court oversight of these prisons. And that can cost millions and millions of dollars.
Indeed. We handled one of those for 10 years. It was called the Fussell lawsuit. It was a 10-year class action lawsuit here in Ohio that oversaw all. It was for all inmates and for all institutions related to the inadequate staffing of doctors and nurses throughout the institution. And because of that lawsuit, we did have measurable improvements in the amount of staffing and the decrease in wait times. Unfortunately, that lawsuit came to an end in 2010. So since then, you know, we have individual cases and we rely on, you know, as I said, we only take the most extreme, rare cases around the system. You need a correctional institution inspection committee going in on a regular basis, catching this stuff before it turns into such egregious, expensive, and inhumane conditions.
Absolutely.
And just to add to what Stephen said, here at the ACLU, we have noticed in the past year since the CIIC has basically been, incapacitated, the number of complaints that we receive on a daily basis has gone up exponentially. And, what we look for, we typically do not bring the individual damages cases that Stephen mentions, but we look at the institutional systemic issues that Michelle mentioned. And, I think that is a real value that CIIC had was that, certainly they were looking at specific prisons in the state and, doing inspections, catching, major issues, intervening when a prisoner was not given medical treatment or mental health treatment. But that they also issued reports on some of the issues going on overall in the prison, on use of force, or on food services, or on mental health treatment, and that was also incredibly valuable in terms of giving information to government officials, to the Department of Corrections, to the legislature, to the governor, to the public, in order to be responsive to those issues and hopefully change course before it got to the point of litigation.
I think
as we're seeing more and more intake coming into our office, and now there isn't that independent watchdog helping to change the course of our prison system, the probability that eventually there will be another one of these major systemic lawsuits is only growing. And I think that's an unfortunate thing.
Stephen, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks to reporter Alan Johnson for the light he's shown on this as well. It's really valuable to have that in our democracy, to have
that
kind of reporting.
Thank you.
It's Stephen from the Ohio Justice and Policy Center in Cincinnati. Just a politics issue. We need to take a break, but before we do, Alan Johnson, briefly, when do you remember the legislature giving up power like they are now by shifting this to the administration?
There would be an example that my colleague Kathy Kandisky would know better, but she mentioned there was an education oversight committee in the last couple of years that the same thing happened to.
Okay. We will continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about prison oversight this hour in light of the fact that the Legislative Oversight Agency for Ohio State Prison System may soon be eliminated. Some of its duties shifted to the Ohio Inspector General's office, which is not overseen by the legislature, but rather the governor's office. So, well, not the governor's office directly, but it's under their purview. Still with us is reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Alan Johnson, also senior policy director for ACLU Ohio, Mike Brickner, and senior lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin and prison oversight expert, Michelle Deitch. She's also the co-chair of the American Bar Association Subcommittee on Correctional Oversight. Questions or comments? Give us a call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a retired prison warden here on calling in. I'm going to turn to him first. George Alexander in Delaware, you're on the air. What prison did you were you warden?
I was a first warden at Madison Correctional Institution and then to London and finally at Pickaway. And I began my state service at Lucasville just as it was opening, and I worked my way through a lot of the ranks there and dealt with a lot of issues, both inmate issues and staff issues.
So you remember when the CIIC was formed then in 1977?
I certainly do, and I did not like it. And let's see, I think we dealt with Peter Davis and...
That's right.
Let's see, and... I forget the next one, but anyway, they would write letters in to us with inmate complaints, and we would look into them, and a lot of the complaints were just irritating. But however, people needed a way to complain. But then once in a while, an issue would be there that hit us in the face, and there were some things we really had to look at and straighten out.
Like what? Can you give us an example?
Oh, medical issues. The medical issues were high on the complaint list. Sometimes it would be food, once in a while programming, but it had a lot to do with the way that we were operating our business and also wanting to do things right on behalf of the inmates and also for the state. It's a state responsibility. They're still our citizens. And they needed to be handled appropriately.
Sir, this is Alan Johnson. Thanks for all that service you did. I've covered prisons for about 25 or 30 years, so I'm very familiar with your work and those of your colleagues. It sounds like that the CIIC could be a little pain in the butt maybe at time to time, but it also, I'm hearing, you tell me if I'm wrong, that there was some value to it, that sometimes you need to be, as you say, hit in the face with things to make changes. That sounds like it's accurate, is it?
I think you're right. We did need to be reminded of things. And I've been away from it for 15 or 16 years now, but I think I understand the business well enough to know that if we can get away with some things, we'll try it. Mm-hmm. But we do need to be reminded of how to do things right. And there is a way to do it right. They're still human beings. They're still our citizens, and they need to be handled appropriately.
You sound like a lot like Gary Moore, who, as you know, is the correctional or the prison director now. And I think he's a very human person. He has a very attitude, very much like you're saying now.
Gary and I both became wardens at the same time.
Mm-hmm. George Alexander, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Very good.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Michelle Deitch, across the country, you know, you just heard from a warden who had a ton of experience across the board in Ohio prisons. He appreciated it. It was irksome, but he appreciated it. He got it. Do the people that actually run the prisons tend to, respond like what we just heard?
You know, I think that those who have experienced it realize, just like this last caller did, that it is absolutely essential. Anytime you've got a public institution that's responsible for the lives of citizens, you need some external way of making sure that they are being treated appropriately. And those who run institutions have come to see the benefits of it for their own facilities. I have had wardens around the country and in around the world, for that matter, tell me that independent oversight makes them better at what they do, because every institution can improve, even if they're doing a good job. It lets them have an outside set of eyes that comes in and says, hey, have you thought about doing things a different way? Or I saw this in another facility, and maybe that's a practice you'd like to try out here. It's about sharing good practices as well as pointing out things that can be improved. It's not just about playing a game of gotcha. In fact, it shouldn't be about that. It's really all about trying to make things better. So,
I hope the legislator was listening to what you just said, because that's really important. And again, I admit I am biased in this subject, because I think the public is really, really benefited by having an oversight agency. So I hope the legislators listen to those words. An oversight agency independent is extraordinarily important.
I think the other thing to highlight from what the warden mentioned was that CIIC also really gave a voice to the people who are incarcerated in our prison. That, you know, a big part of the work that they do is when they go and do an inspection, they don't just go into a prison and, you know, check off a series of boxes. That, you know, they oftentimes talk directly to the prisoners at that facility. They have focus groups with them. And so it really became an opportunity for the prison officials to hear directly from the prisoners and how they felt the environment was. But it also gave an opportunity for, you know, we the public and the taxpayers and the other, you know, watchdog groups to be able to hear directly from the people who are incarcerated, who oftentimes, you know, don't have much of a voice in society anymore, and hear directly about their experiences while they were in prison. And I think there's real value to that.
That's such an important point. And people who are voiceless act out in different ways. You know, we saw those riots and uprisings in Delaware, and certainly in other states. People who don't feel like someone's listening to them act out in any way that they can to get that attention. And this gives a very productive and meaningful way for them to feel like they can get their complaints heard and addressed.
It'll be 25 years ago next year, the Lucasville prison riot and siege. I think it was a 10 or 12 day siege.
That's
on the prison. I covered it all 12 days. I think Alan Johnson was probably there for the dispatch. Thomas in Columbus, you're on the air. You serve time in prison. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And gracious, as usual. But I'm going to dovetail right off what you just mentioned. The Lucasville riot was inspired from being inside and in the second level of security when all that stuff was being planned on the inside, was because of a right, and that was the medical right to not take those shots for hepatitis, or I forgot what it was. Now I can't come up with the right phrase. Then secondly, religion. And then third, food. And even the former warden mentioned, guys would riot if you run out of chicken, for instance, on chicken day. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Institution Inspection Committee got involved with Lebanon Correctional under William Dahlman, everything went perfectly well in that prison, because he addressed the issues that they were advocating on our behalf and worked with residents, worked with us, and it made for a better environment for us. And finally, the Institution Committee then, Joyce Ann Clark and former mayor of Dayton, Ryan McLean, they would show up at 3 o'clock in the morning in that prison and be there all day, all the dining hall sessions, in the gym, out on the yard. And with that type of interaction, it made better for everyone. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling, Thomas. Yeah, I mean, just if you think about what the cost of something like the Lucasville event 24 years ago, there was a huge cost to that event. It changed a lot of things, but not before the state was out a lot of money, and it was a lot had to do, Mike Brickner, with prisoner complaints.
Absolutely. That again, the role of accountability and independent oversight is to find solutions to problems before they be before they boil over, like it did in Lucasville. And I think, you know, everyone here in the state absolutely is aligned in wanting to, you know, prevent any acts of violence. And I think that, again, having accountability, having oversight, having a way for prisoners to be able to air their complaints, for serious complaints to be dealt with and raised with the Department of Corrections, is all incredibly important in making sure that we don't continue to have these problems. And the real unfortunate thing is, you know, we're talking about dissolving CIIC, and that's certainly a serious concern, but, you know, we should be concerned about where CIIC is today, that even as they exist now and if no changes are made, we're still not seeing an active CIIC. And that, you know, that is something that every taxpayer should be concerned about, because our prison system needs that oversight. We have many wonderful people, including Director Moore, who oversee our Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections and have, you know, very good intentions and do great work. But they have also been dealt a very difficult hand. They have so many people in prison and so few resources that having that outside, independent, unbiased accountability is so incredibly important right now for us to be able to prevent another incident from occurring.
Should the federal government play a role on prison oversight at the state level, Mike Brickner?
Well, the federal government certainly can. I mean, if a state prison or even a jail or any other type of correctional facility has significant problems, you know, the Department of Justice can certainly get involved. You know, if there is something that occurs that could have been a violation of federal law, they can perform a criminal investigation into the facility. But if there are systemic issues, they can oftentimes enter into an investigation. And if they find those systemic issues, they can negotiate a consent decree is usually what happens, where, as you know, Michelle described earlier, this is when a jail or a prison would be under a monitoring agreement with a federal court, ensuring that they were complying with federal laws and the Constitution. You know, with the federal government, though, you know, what the Department of Justice gets involved in can vary dramatically depending on the administration in power. And so, you know, we are still at the very beginning of the Trump administration, and I think it's still unclear where they will prioritize work in our prisons and jails.
If I could just add to that, of course, I agree the federal government, the role of the Justice Department is absolutely critical in providing a backstop for the most extreme unconstitutional conditions. But there's no way it substitutes for this at all, because it is a small part of the department, of the Justice Department, the section that deals with this, and they've got the entire country to look at. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that they can deal with issues that come up on any timely basis. They would be stretched way too thin to do something like that.
Michelle,
and one quick note real quickly. We haven't discussed it, but CIIC also covered juvenile prisons.
That's
so we
right.
were also talking about young people in prison, and that's a whole other area.
A whole other ball of wax. Michelle Deitch, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for caring about this issue. It is so important.
Michelle Deitch, senior lecturer at the University of Texas at Austin and a prison oversight expert, also co-chair of the American Bar Association's Subcommittee on Correctional Oversight. Also, Mike Brickner, thank you so much. I appreciate your time today.
Thanks again, Ann.
Mike Brickner, Senior Policy Director for the ACLU Ohio, and Alan Johnson, reporter for Columbus Dispatch. Thanks, Alan, as always.
Absolutely, Ann.
And once again, we did invite officials from the Ohio General Assembly, the Ohio Department of Corrections, and the Inspector General's Office. Either they did not respond or they declined our invitation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.